And now, biggest growth industry in the U.S.? Think about it. Who wouldn't want to be part of a trade that has reached the highest volume since the Cold War? An industry that rakes in over $100 billion annually and has created thousands of jobs in over 100 countries. Signs of success? Hard to say. The arms industry is also a cloud that shadows the global economy. An industrial giant, if you look at output, millions upon millions of small arms and tanks, thousands of military aircraft, or even the 14,000 nuclear weapons on Earth, 93% of which are owned by the U.S. and Russia. It's a destabilizing force everywhere in the world. The arms trade enables gun violence, civil war, regional warfare, all of which impose a severe economic penalty on the global economy. Destroying the planet altogether, well, that's a bargain in the math of the arms trade. Less than 100 nukes would do the job. Paul Holden is a historian, researcher, and writer and editor of the book Indefensible, Seven Myths That Sustain the Global Arms Trade. Holden says the arms trade makes the world less safe and less prosperous, period.
At current levels, and even at the Cold War levels, the size of the nuclear arsenal is just utterly obscene. If there was ever a nuclear war, it would destroy the world 1,000 times over. And I think what happens is that there is a cycle of fear and response that's required from that fear that gets created. During the Cold War, particularly from the American side, there was a very inflated sense of the real threat that Russia posed militarily. And as a result, there was an enormous amount of pressure inside the U.S. to increase the nuclear arsenal, to be shown to be doing something. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that, not least the fact that the arms trade is very good and arms companies are very good at selling their weapons as the solution to insecurity, or selling their weapons as the answer to all situations. There was a phenomenal book by a professor who is now based in London called Professor Mary Kaldor, which she wrote in the mid-1980s. And what that book outlined was the absolute insanity of Cold War arms development, you know, developing weapons that made absolutely no sense whatsoever, were complete sci-fi freak show types of weapons, but absorbed enormous amounts of economic resources. And part of the reason why is because there's such a close relationship between the defense industry and policymakers that when they sell a crazy arms solution to a security problem, the policymakers will generally go with it.
So this is the military-industrial complex argument of Eisenhower, just completely out of control.
Oh, I would totally agree with that. So the United States spends more than the next six countries in the world combined. You know, America spends $600 billion on military spending. To give you a sense of comparison, the next largest is China, which is just over $200 billion in defense spending. I know that Donald Trump has pushed for an increase in the size of the U.S. defense budget of $54 or $57 billion that he's requesting. That is the same size as the entire Russian defense budget. So just the increase that he's requesting, which is not even a 10% increase on the current U.S. defense budget. And I think what's even more remarkable is that it's not, you know, the United States is a huge arms spender, and then you have a whole series of states that are opposed to the United States that are big spenders. If you add in the United States and NATO countries, which are aligned to the United States, they contribute more than 60% of all defense spending around the world. So American defense spending is absolutely enormous. And when you add in their allies around the world, it is completely dwarfs anybody else.
Listen to Dakota Wood, who's a senior research fellow for defense programs at the Heritage Foundation, speaking about military buildup. Does he sound like he's out of his mind?
So it looks like we're policing the world. What we're actually doing is protecting our own interests, because that brings economic life to the United States. It keeps trading partners on our side. We sell our goods and services abroad, and it gives us access to many other regions for raw materials and those sorts of markets.
I mean, there's two elements to that argument that I find very interesting. The one is that the morality of American deployments around the world isn't discussed at all, that it's perfectly appropriate to say, well, we're deploying the military to secure economic gains. But you really have to worry about, you know, what is the military being used for? Is it engaging in gross human rights violations? We see today in Yemen, for example, that there have been at least 10,000 casualties since the Saudi-led coalition led bombing raids on Yemen. 4,000 innocent civilians that the coalition has been targeting, in particular, civilian sites of gathering like hospitals. There is a threatened famine which could, you know, affect 7.5 to 10 million people. And that's essentially the result of U.S. support for Saudi Arabia and U.S. deployments in the Middle East. It seems to me that there's a strong moral argument against pursuing that sort of line. The second argument argument is economic. And I don't buy the idea that spending enormous amount of money on weapons and then deploying them abroad to iffy ends that don't necessarily produce security results is good for the economy at all. In certain countries like Libya, there is effectively no government. I'm not sure how on earth you can expect to trade with a governmentless entity that is throwing out insecurity in the region. In the United States, the military-industrial complex absorbs an enormous quantity of resources. And we argue in Indefensible that one of the most persistent myths of the arms trade is that the arms trade is good for the economy, when it's actually the reverse. It absorbs a huge amount of money. And as a job creator and as a technical innovator, it is very poor at that job. If you were to spend $1 billion on defense, according to a study by the University of Amherst, Massachusetts, you create about 12,000 jobs. If you spend the same amount of money on education, it's about 27,000 jobs. So the economic benefits of this, I think, are illusory. I'm not suggesting that countries entirely demilitarize. I think that's an unrealistic argument in the world that we face, because there are going to be conflicts. What we want to see is defense spending that is actually tied to security threats, and defense spending that increases security rather than decreases security.
Paul Holden, in 10 years, do you think we will have seen the use of a nuclear weapon?
Wow, that's a very difficult question to answer. I would very much hope not. I think that would be a tragedy beyond imagining. I think that the scale of death and destruction that would be produced by a modern nuclear weapon, we have to bear in mind that modern nuclear weapons are considerably more powerful than the weapons that were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And even those caused just untold devastation. I think I would find it very difficult to see a nuclear conflict between the big nuclear powers that exist. The most likely you're going to see, if there is going to be a nuclear attack, the way it may come about is actually through a program that's been developed in the United States and received a lot of funding under Obama to produce sort of smaller weaponized nuclear weapons that could be used in sort of local regional conflicts. Personally, I have to believe in the essential rationality of humans in the end to pull back from the brink of a war that would destroy everything. I have to believe that the chances are slim, and if we were ever to reach that precipice, that the people in control would recognize the enormity of that moment and find their common humanity.
Paul Holden is a historian, researcher, and writer. He is the editor of Indefensible, Seven Myths That Sustain the Global Arms Trade. He spoke to us from London. Paul, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.